Welcome. This is Cascade Church Portland's podcast. We exist to invite all people to join us as we follow Jesus together in bringing heaven to earth. All right. Here's a question. And we'll actually raise our hands for this one. Sometimes it's just, it's just a question. But this is a hand-raising question. How many of you guys have ever served in a soup kitchen, a homeless center, something like that before? Like you've served meals. Yeah, there's a lot of folks here. When I was in high school is when I first started this. And it was something that I thought was so awesome. Like, I got to go down and I got to help people who were hungry. I got to serve them food. And I remember being there and thinking, man, I'm going to change some lives today. This 16-year-old kid, this smile on my face, this little pep in my step, man, I'm going to turn some of those frowns right upside down. I'm going to hand out some ham sandwiches. I'm going to talk, be chatty. I'm going to hang out with everybody. And I remember that there was this incredible kindness that I received from a couple of people, and they were like, all right, Skippy, calm it down a little bit, but thank you. This is great. I'm glad that you're here. And then I remember encountering for the first time someone that was kind of rude. They weren't terribly interested in my big smile and my happiness and my joy that was going to overwhelm all of the issues that they may have faced. And I remember having this moment of forget you. I could be playing video games. I could be doing all kinds of awesome stuff. And here you are not being grateful for this incredible sacrifice of time. And I'm pretty sure that my pastor told me I'm becoming way more like Jesus by doing this. And here you are scowling at me. See, it's fascinating what we mean and what we talk about when we get into advocacy. And what that actually produces, what that creates. I think there's a lot of times that there's great work done by a great number of homeless shelters and different places that are out there. But sometimes the way that we engage with them is the same way that we engage in a pizza party, or we engage in playing a round of golf, or we engage in meeting a friend for dinner and a drink. It's another thing on our schedule to go and do. And we show up and we smile and we check it off. And at the end, everyone who smiles back at us, we feel good about. Anyone who scowls at us, that was their problem. I had this realization that I thought, maybe I'd reform some of those childish thoughts from when I was really young. But I still felt like I was this engaged person that would show up and be there and be present and be helping and be caring and be empathetic and be listening to people's stories. But what I found was it was just a block on my calendar, little blue block. And as soon as I crossed over that line and the event was over, my heart didn't remain any more open, not just to people who live on the street, but really anybody. It was like all the white space on my calendar with just the lines, that was Kurt time. And I got to do what I want when I wanted to do it. I got to see and engage the world. And I found that sometimes I was fighting battles that were petty and small because I wasn't involved in big battles that mattered. I wasn't involved on a day-to-day basis with the heart and soul of what it means to be alive and what it means to be living. And so when we talk about advocacy this morning, here's where this isn't going. We're going to talk about some different ways that people in our church are involved and they're trying to show up. But my heart here isn't that we're going to be at the end of this and then we're going to have a sign-up sheet out in the lobby and we're all going to sign up and we're going to go do this work project together and then we're going to take lots of glossy photos of it and high-five and feel great. No, advocacy is something far deeper. It's something that runs the course of every day and every moment. It opens our eyes to a reality that is existing at the same time as our reality. And so when we talk about this and we talked about all of our core values, it's probably worth just doing a brief recap. Not a brief one, a brief one. So we have our five different core values that we've walked through. The first is intentionality that we talked about. We want this church and this place, and when I say that, I don't mean the people that work here like myself, but I mean us, corporately. We want to be people of intention with one another. This means that we're thoughtful, we're aware, we're invested in the lives of other people around us. We don't fall into the siren call of our own schedule, our own lives, our own things. We keep our eyes and our hearts open. What's going on? And sometimes we send a message when we're afraid it's not the message that they want. Or like they didn't return the last two messages. Or maybe you walk next door and you check in on a neighbor on Valentine's Day and you're like, is that weird? That might be kind of weird. I don't know. Should I check in? I don't think I should. I'm going to leave her alone. We step out in those places and we say, no, we want to be intentional about living and we want to be intentional about life, and we're going to step out of our comfort zone with one another. We also talked about diversity. This was my favorite message because it was the one I didn't preach. We had Pastor Jonathan Brooks came and shared really a brilliant look theologically at the whole idea of what diversity is. And how we frame it here is it's basically everybody who's different from you. And we're saying that everyone who is different from you has been created by God, and being in relationship with these folks is the best thing that could ever happen to you. If you want to understand the kingdom of God, if you want to understand who God is and what God is all about, you should probably spend some time with people who are different than you, not just surround yourself with people who are similar to you. We talked about curiosity. We say there's more that we don't know about God in the world than what we do know. So we respond to that by being open and asking lots and lots of questions. And just this last week, we talked about prayer. And we talked about prayer as showing up and engaging in a way that's different than I make my requests and either God decides to listen or not listen. But instead, I step into this place to open myself up. And this opening of myself in prayer makes me present to God, to experience the presence of God, and very importantly, it makes me present in the world, in my life, where I'm living. If your exercise of prayer cuts you off and creates more distance from the reality of what is going on around you, your coworkers, your family, that's not a good thing. I don't think that's the heart and model of prayer. And so today we talk about advocacy. Advocacy, we define it this way. We fight injustices with those who have been treated insignificantly by individuals, systems, or indifference. When we're talking about this and advocacy and how we could show up and care in the world, we had like marginalized and oppressed. These were words that we had worked with, we were used to. And we looked at like, what do those words mean? And that's where we came across that treated insignificantly. And I love it because it opens the door even wider. That there are people in your life, there are people in your family, there are people that you work with, there are people that you brush shoulders with on a day-to-day basis who have been treated and are being treated insignificantly. So how do we open ourselves up to that? How do we become the kinds of people that are aware of systems that are in place that treat people insignificantly? See, there's a lot of times where we just think of like one person being mean to another person, and that is an injustice, and I will step in there. And that is certainly true. That's why we included individuals. A lot of times there are big systems in place that they weren't put there by some evil supervillain to keep people down necessarily. But they're there and people get chewed up in the wheels of bureaucracy. There's a lot of people that live in Portland. There's more people, surprisingly, that live in the state of Oregon. Even more people live in the United States of America. And when you try and make law and policy for that many people, guess what? Not everyone gets served by those policies and systems. Some people don't. And so how do we become aware of this? How are we the ones that see these places where people get dropped in systems and the church is there to care and support? Sometimes no one's being mean. There's not a big system in place. It's just indifference. It's just ignoring. It's just they're the ones that no one sees. We went on a trip to Tanzania a couple months ago, and it was a part of saying that we really believe this heart for advocacy and justice needs to be rooted here because this is where we live. I like to say it's not really justice if you have a return flight. Like, it's good, it's amazing, but you have to practice it where you live. So we went to Tanzania to also see, but there's people whose reality are very different than the one we have. How are we opened up to what's happening in the world? One of the ministries that they had there was for single mothers. Single mothers in Tanzania, it's tough to be able to go and work for the day. And what do you do with your kids? How do you negotiate that? And in the area and region where we were at, the coffee industry is a big deal. Did you know that if you worked all day in the coffee fields and you were picking coffee beans, you could make up to $5 a week? Wow. $5 for the week. Now, you have to be able to take care of yourself, to be able to take care of your children. How are you able to do that? There's another industry that happens there in Tanzania. It's the sex trade. And you get $5 for one encounter. Over the course of the week, you can stand to make a whole lot more money in the sex trade than you can picking coffee beans. And so single mothers who are on the edge of desperation turn to something that we might turn our nose up or turn away from or not see. And so this ministry of people that we are working with said, being a seamstress is an industry that's actually really helpful. It pays well. And so they did a training program for free for these single mothers to learn how to be a seamstress, to be able to make a living wage for them and their kids. And the name of the ministry, I can't say it because it's in Kiswahili, but it translates to the ones who are unseen. The unseen ones. I love the heart around that. It wasn't like they put out this huge, massive study. It wasn't like they went and talked with one person and someone led a campaign and then everybody signed up for it. There were some people that looked around and were in relationship with their cousins, with their family members, with their people that they knew, and they said, this isn't right. This isn't just, and there's a whole bunch of our population that just doesn't see it. How do we see these people and we help out? That's what we're talking about. Who are the unseen ones in your life? Who are the unseen ones in your circles? All right, here's where we're going to start. We're going to look at the Bible. I mean, we've already started. Don't get scared. But this is where we're going to go. We're going to look at Isaiah 10. So if you brought your Bible with you, if you have it available to you on a device or something, I encourage you to turn there. If not, we will have it up on the screen. But let's talk a little bit about Isaiah. It's a book in the Bible. It's in the Old Testament. And the book of Isaiah is set up like this. There is the huge rise of the Assyrian Empire. And like all empires don't get called empires because they don't gobble up people and places. That's how you get called an empire. So they were gobbling up people and places. And the Israelites in this, we have the northern and the southern kingdom, they were part of this. And as they were being gobbled, as this was going on, Isaiah was a prophet. And he came to say, our downfall as a nation are linked to these things that are other than the heart of God. See, the Israelite nation, the whole vision for them is they had been blessed by God, not so they could be like, we're totally God's favorite. They were blessed by God so that they could bless the whole world. This was the way that God wanted to be known in the world. And they received these blessings and thought, who would know if we pass it all on, right? Maybe we hold on for a little bit of it for ourselves. And they had ended up holding on to a lot of it. So Isaiah, the whole first part it's a prophecy of judgment. It's not fun to read. It's not like you'll probably never get like a prayer of Jabez, like a prayer of Isaiah, like judgment and death from God to you. You probably won't get that book, probably won't be written. And yet, in the second part, it says, but this is the hope. This is where it's moving. And it's fascinating some of the pieces that it picks up. What is this linked to? What is this judgment linked to? In Isaiah 10, 1 and 2, woe to those who make unjust laws, to those who issue oppressive decrees, to deprive the poor of their rights and withhold justice from the oppressed of my people, making widows their prey and robbing the fatherless. Just before this in Isaiah 9, he just got done with these really vivid word picture. Like, you are going to be the people who eat all day and are never satisfied, are never filled. You're going to eat and eat and eat and never, ever be full. And he said, like, you all will be fuel for the fire. And then he gets into this woe. What is this linked to? Like this harsh, harsh judgment of who they are. It's this. How do you have a pulse for a society? How do you know if a society is just? You don't go to the tops of the society. You don't go to the people in the highest tax bracket and say, how is this country working out for you? No, if you want to know about a society, you go to the people that no one else is seeing. You go to the people that no one else is talking to, and you say, how is it working out for you? How is the society treating and responding to you? And see, the thing that is the backbone of all of this, I say it a lot, and I'm going to say it more. It's the God of all people. That's what Christianity is rooted in. That's what Judaism is rooted in. The God of all people. So the transformational thing about Christianity is you get to care for all people. Because there's never been a person you've ever met or seen on TV that wasn't created by God. Not a one. So if you live in a society, if you create a society that is fueled and feast on the poor and the marginalized, guess what? It can be a lot of things. It's just not God's picture of how this is supposed to work. Otherwise, the implications is that God would create some people just to be fuel for your wealth. Or he created you to be the fuel for someone else's wealth. What? No. There's this beautiful word that that God uses, this picture of shalom. The peaceful thriving of all people. This is what God created us for. So what are the sins of the Israelites that they are receiving judgment? You set up a system that feasted on people who already didn't have rights. You didn't care for these folks. One of the things that bears like just a second beat, it uses that word widow. Widow in this culture became synonymous for the people that were unseen. Because in the Israelite nation, it was a patriarchal society, which means that the man was the one that was the landowner, was the worker, was the provider for the family. So when the man died and the widow was left, she didn't have the ability. There's some debate, but it's largely assumed she didn't have the ability to own land. So she couldn't transfer land. The jobs system and the way that it worked was there weren't many industries, at least not ones that we would want to sign up for, that were available for widows at that time. And so there's lots and lots in the Old Testament. They talk about widows a lot because what they're saying is your society should be set up to care for these people. It's already not set up in the job market and all that way. It's not set up to care for these individuals. So you all need to orient yourself to care for these people. So how could you tell the health of the Israelite nation? Go find the widows. That's how you tell. It's not their GDP. It's not how well they're doing economically. It's not how impressive the palace or the kingdom is. You go and you find the widows. And how is this working out for you? Because in God's system, All people are seen and all people are served. Okay. So this is it runs all throughout the Old Testament, this heart of seeing and caring for people. It starts even at the very beginning. We have Adam and Eve, right? And they have two kids, Cain and Abel. One of them kills the other one. So if you ever think your kids have a bad fight, could be worse. But there's this brilliant little line that kind of gets missed. When God finds Cain, he said, "Cain, where is your brother Abel?" Right? This is kind of like one of those newsy shows, you know, where they like show up and they like, it's gotcha journalism, right? God's like, "Hey, where's Abel?" And Cain says, "What am I, my brother's keeper?" Yes. Yep. See, at the beginning of the story, we have the opportunity like, "Hey, God, I'm just going to do me." And God says, "Nope. No, we're all in this together. I created all of you. So you don't just get to go do your own thing. We are aware and we are present in our world and our lives to all people that we come into contact with." Now, some of you are like, "Yeah, but Old Testament versus New Testament." Don't worry, got it taken care of. Let's look at Luke. Luke 4. This is Jesus, and actually, this is the passage of scripture that leading into prayer time, Shannon read, which is fantastic because I didn't even show her my notes. Luke 4. So, let's get some context. This is what Jesus has just been doing. Jesus has just done his 40 days out in the desert. All right, let's do more context. Jesus, we have this whole period of time where we don't hear anything from him. He's born, we celebrate Christmas, we have that. Yeah, we have a couple of stories from where he's really young, but then there's this long gap. And when the story picks back up, we look at, say, Jesus is about 30 years old. We have the baptism of Jesus by John the Baptist, who would have been his cousin. It would have been a family member that he'd known. And he says, "This is him. This is the Messiah. This is the leader that you as the Israelite nation have been looking for." And it's this beautiful, really powerful moment where it says, this, Jesus, he is the one. And Jesus immediately goes on a press circuit and he's like, "Hey, everybody, I'm the chosen one. Nice to meet you." Now, 40 days in the desert, he disappears. He's gone. And in this, they have these temptation scenes with Jesus. This in Luke 4, in the Gospel of Luke, this is some of the first moments of Jesus back in society. He's been baptized by John the Baptist, who already exists kind of on the outskirts of the city and what's going on. He immediately goes out into the desert, and now he's coming back. And what does Jesus say? This is in Luke 4, starting in verse 16 and 17. "He went to Nazareth, where he had been brought up, and on the Sabbath day, he went into the synagogue as was his custom. He stood up to read, and the scroll of the prophet Isaiah was handed to him. Unrolling it, he found the place where it is written." That's a good pregnant pause, right? Yeah, all right, here we go. "The Spirit of the Lord is on me, because he's anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor. He sent me to proclaim freedom for the prisoners and recovery of sight for the blind and set the oppressed free to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor." I love it. How do you know when it's the year of the Lord's favor? Don't go to the top of the tax bracket. Go to the bottom. You want to know if it's the year of the Lord's favor? It's a lifting up of the people who have been pushed down. It's a lifting up of the people that are oppressed and marginalized and on the side. What is Jesus calling? He's calling a new way of living and being. And you want to know who's excited about it? Those who don't have power. You want to know who's not excited about it? Those who do have power. It's fascinating. You look at Jesus' posse, like this group of people that went with him. And there's actually this word in the Gospel of Mark, the oklos. And in Greek, it literally translates to this pushing, like, crowd. It's not like this. It's not orderly. It's not nice. It's like pushing in this, like, heaving kind of organism. This was Jesus' following. A lot of these folks had nowhere else to go, or the great hope for us, they made a decision there was nowhere else they'd rather be. These were the people that didn't have any other options, and so they were going with Jesus. Why? Because Jesus was one of the first ones to see them. There's stories of Jesus going out to the lepers. Lepers would have been on the fringes of society. They would have been pushed out so they don't infect anybody else. And where does Jesus go? Out to the lepers. Jesus went to the outskirts of the cities and the towns. Very rarely, it's actually not until the end of the story that Jesus really goes into a major city, and that doesn't end super well, at least initially, but, you know, Easter's coming, April, come on back, find out how that goes. He's always on the fringes because he's lifting up the people that are unseen, the people who are marginalized and pushed out, the people who have been treated insignificantly. Jesus tells a story about sheep and goats. He talks about this great dividing. He tells us, like, it's this big story. It's like the end of time, and God comes back, and he separates people. And the people who are marked with, you got it, you did it, it doesn't have anything to do with wealth, use of power, education, how many times you showed up to church on Sunday. See, again, a lot of times when we read the Bible, we read it and like, well, that's how it was supposed to be. No, it could have been written another way, and it wasn't. So when we read how it is written, we should also understand what isn't there. There's lots of things Jesus could have put in there to say, this is what it means to get it. This is what it means to usher in the year of our Lord's favor. This is what it means to be a part of the kingdom of God. And what does Jesus talk about? I was thirsty, you gave me something to drink. I was in prison, you came and visited me. I didn't have clothing, and you clothed me. And a lot of churches, in really beautiful ways, run out and say, okay, we got this. We got a food pantry, we got a clothing closet, we got a prison ministry, which are great. I think Jesus is saying more there than just specific ministries you should start. I'm saying, these are all the people that you don't see. These are all the people you choose not to see. These are all the people on the fringes. So what does it mean to usher in the year of the Lord's favor? What does it mean to be a part of this thing called Christianity? You have your eyes and your ears opened to people that had previously been off of your radar. Here are some steps. Because again, let's look at the definition one more time of advocacy. Our definition of advocacy is we fight injustices with those who have been treated insignificantly by individuals, systems, or indifference. Now, I'm sure most of you are like, got it, check, 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 I'm already doing it. But some of you might be like, how do I do that? Like, cool idea, I'm with you, it seems important in the Bible, this whole Christianity thing, it's like it seems significant. But how do I go and do that? Here's the first question. Who has been treated insignificantly? We have that little bulletin thing that we give you, and it's an opportunity to write down notes. And normally I'm not big, because not everyone's a note taker. I would really encourage you to write something down on there. Who has been treated insignificantly? Who is it in your life? Who is it that you know about? Who are the people that you see and are around on a daily basis that have been treated insignificantly? See, a lot of times we want to go big, and we want to go find, like, who is the person that's treated the most insignificantly? I think that's great. That's beautiful. You don't always have to go there. You might find this person in the same house that you live in. You might find this person in an office that you work at. You might find this person really, really close. You might find this person in this room right now. Who has been treated insignificantly around you? And how do you kick back to life the Imago Dei, which is the image of God planted in each and every person, just by doing the humanizing act of seeing people around you? Just seeing them. Now, after we see people, then we ask the question, where are the places where we can listen to those who have been treated insignificantly? Far too often when it comes to advocacy, And I've been fully guilty of this. This isn't like a throwing stones section of the message. This is a like, yeah, me too. We identify someone. You already thought of someone that's treated insignificantly. And then we've created a path and like a little thing to excellence for them. And like, this is how we're going to get them to not be treated insignificantly anymore. And we're going to help them. And we're going to be their buddy. And we're going to text them. And we're going to use lots of emojis so they know that they're loved, like a bunch of hearts. We're going to slip little notes to them. And here's one thing that we might miss. We might have never listened to them. See, the first step is seeing them. The second step is listening to them. What do you need? What do you want? See, a lot of times we like to continue this thing of like, I'll get involved in advocacy as long as I maintain that I'm up here and you're down there. See, this is a thing that drives me nuts. So much of the time in the world, we walk around and we see people as either people that have something to offer us or people that I have something to offer. Do you want to know who has something to offer you? And do you want to know who has that someone that you can offer something? Everyone. Every human being that has ever been created. If you ever sign up for a ministry because I'm going to go help them, and then you walk back and you're like, you want to know the truth of it? Actually, they changed me. Yeah, because that's living. That's the way this thing is supposed to work. We as Christians should stop being surprised by that. Because what we're saying when we say, actually, they served me, is you never even thought that this person had something to offer you when you walked in the door. We have got to stop doing that. We see people and then we listen to them. Not so I can fix them, but so we can reinstall this humanity that is supposed to be in all people. Now, only after you have seen people and only after you have listened, now you can start to act. Now we start to move. Now we start to organize and come around people and we fight against systems that in time are keeping people marginalized. We say these are the things that we're going to do to support the people around us. Because just more than listening and seeing them, there's still something in the way. There's still something that will always keep them here and will always keep me there. There's different opportunities that have been offered to me than have to someone else. Now, when I use some of that language, just so you know, I'm not assuming that like, oh, we're all up here. What I'm assuming is that there is always someone who has been marginalized from our vantage point. Wherever you are, like here or there, just there, right? There's always someone who has been marginalized. And when we open our eyes and see them, it isn't to pull them up to where we are. It's to understand that we're all in this together and we reestablish our humanity. So, very often and very fairly, I get critiqued when I do messages and like really good thoughts, but seriously, what the heck? Like, what do we do? How do we get involved? See, some of us, all of us need to start by seeing and listening, but we might not even know like, where do I go with this? Here's the first. Tomorrow night, we have the meeting at the community for immigrant justice. We need one more person to go and be a part of this cohort, to go to this first meeting, or us as a church, Cascade, we're not going to be able to be a part of the cohort. It takes at least three people to start. And so I say that not to guilt you, but just to state the reality. Like if we're not talking about the cohort and what the people that are a part of it are learning in the future, that would be the reason why. We have two people right now. We need three. Let's get one more person there. Other ways that our people are involved. One of my favorite people in this church, no offense to you, her name is Lana Millington. She's downstairs and she works with our kids and she really does a bit of everything. Amazing woman. She gives time every week to go to Kelly Elementary. She helps out in the library. She just helps out at the school. She's there with the kids. Why? because she was around Kelly and said, there are people that are in this neighborhood who are unseen. I'm going to show up. I'm going to be a presence there daily, and I'm going to see them. Allison Hurst, who's right back there, one of many who said, there are kids who are looking for mentors. They're looking for another adult in their lives to get involved and, again, to see them and to listen to them. Allison gives her time to volunteer with family and friends mentoring, to show up and help in the life of a child. There are all kinds of amazing things that you all are already doing. And so there's incredible ways to get involved, to show up, to admit, I don't know what I don't know, so I'm going to show up in these places so I can see and listen. Why? Because God is the God of all people. And the year of our Lord's favor will be known when the people who are unseen are seen, when the people who are unheard are heard, when the systems that oppress people out of ignorance, out of not knowing that this system could hurt people, are overthrown and new systems are put in place that aren't perfect. Don't worry, we're not going to get there. Are better at doing two things, seeing people and listening to them. There's another book in the Bible. It's called Proverbs. It's a good one. It's like all the smart stuff. We just collect it all in one place. And in Proverbs, it's the verse I wanted to end with, Proverbs 31. See, he just gets to the end, and the writer of this is saying, like, my son, like, this is what it means to be alive. This is what it means to live. Like, here's the wisdom that you have to hear from me. And in verses 8 and 9, he says, speak up for those who cannot speak for themselves and for the rights of all who are destitute. Speak up and judge fairly. Defend the rights of the poor and the needy. See, there's something that charges the most human parts of us back to life, back to the way I believe we were created to be when we speak out on behalf of those who do not have a voice. Our world is better when more people are seen and heard because the image of God is more fully seen and experienced in our world. Would you pray with me?